Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Honey, steak's on. Come on outside.
What's with the boots?
I'm sick of getting stung by fire ants.
Don't worry, I used Amdro Fire Ant Bait last week.
I don't know. You've tried other stuff before.
Amdro's different. It's a bait. Fire ants think it's food, so they take it back to the mound to share. Once the queen and the other ants eat it, the whole mound dies. Boom. Gone.
You're barefoot. Amdro must work. Off with these boots.
The backyard is so much better barefoot.
Enjoy your yard with Amdro Fire Ant Bait.
Now that's better.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Parenting Aces radio show on Blog Talk Radio's UR Tennis Network. I'm your host, Lisa Stone, and we got another great show for you today. We are going to be chatting with Trey Walston, and just to give you a little bit of background, Trey is actually one of the coaches for my women's tennis team, and I joined a new team this season. Those of you who follow me on Facebook have heard all about it, but when we moved in town in December, I figured it was time to find a new women's team, and I found one and was lucky enough to get Trey as one of the coaches, and Trey's just got a great story to share, and once I heard it, I knew it was one I wanted to share with y'all. So I am really happy to have him on the show today, and it is Thursday morning here. We are actually pre-recording this because typically during our normal airtime, Trey would be on the court coaching. So I was lucky enough to squeeze an hour out of his time where he doesn't have to be on the court. And so I'm really excited to have him on the show today. Let me get him on the line. Hey, Trey, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Lisa, thanks for having me.
Sure. So before we jump in, I wanted to just give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about how you got started in tennis and where you grew up, because you did not grow up in Atlanta. You landed here as an adult, but your junior tennis background is a little bit different from what I'm used to seeing with the kids growing up in such a big tennis center like Atlanta.
Yeah, absolutely. I was born, I actually live less than a mile from where I was born in Northside Hospital. So, you know, they say the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, and that's kind of the case for me. I was born in Atlanta, but we moved to my mom's hometown, which is called Gunnersville, Alabama, when I was 1.5, I think. It's a small lake town about an hour northwest of Birmingham. And honestly, when we started playing tennis, my parents were just looking for a family activity. So when I was 7 and my sister was 9, my parents were in their 30s. My dad, I just picked tennis out of the blue, literally just said, hey, let's try tennis. My dad had grown up playing a little bit. He would go up to the country club and hit against the wall and mess around, but nothing serious. So they picked tennis, and we started out on some public courts with a guy named Sam Vicroy. And we started playing, the whole family did, and I guess I just jumped right into it. So we started playing at 7, and then, as you can imagine, in Gunnersville, Alabama, there are not many people that play tennis. So, you know, after a couple of years, my sister played through high school, so she was a pretty good little player too, but we kind of got into it, and so we started traveling to Huntsville, Alabama every day to practice at a place called Huntsville Athletic Club indoors with a couple pros, one that actually played at Georgia when he was younger. So I guess I got fortunate that my dad picked a pretty good spot to take us to start playing. So it was pretty odd that we jumped into it, but I guess we started and I enjoyed it, so we stuck with it.
So I think your story is probably more typical than that of kids growing up in a tennis metropolis like Atlanta. I mean, I think there are probably a ton of junior players around the country who live in smaller towns that aren't so tennis-centric, and there aren't a ton of people to play with, there aren't a ton of teaching pros around, and so the families have to get creative if the kids really show an interest or a proficiency in the game. And that's what your family did, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So right around 10, when I turned about 10, we ended up maybe 11, we moved to Birmingham. And believe it or not, I think the amount of people I had to practice with went down when we moved from Gunnersville to Birmingham, because we used to be able to drive to Huntsville that had a pretty good little group of kids all around my age. And, you know, when you're younger, you know, you can hit with anybody. But as I got older, I found out that wasn't so easy finding people to practice with. So when I was growing up, man, I had one guy that was older than me, 2 years older than me, that was an awesome player, ended up playing at NC State. His dad was actually the head pro of the club that I trained out of. And then we had one girl that was 2 years younger, and she ended up playing at Alabama like me. So that was kind of our drill group, but we got really creative. I mean, my dad was – I got fortunate – well, maybe fortunate and a little unfortunate. My dad was so into it because he really did a good job of finding people for me to play with, got real creative. I hit on the ball machine, got probably more than any kid in the world, I would imagine. Did a lot of ball machine, but he would find me 45-year-old doctors that were off for the day that wanted to play a practice match that were pretty good. He'd go out there and he'd feed me balls if he had to. He'd sit out there and, I guess, much to my chagrin, sit there and critique my serve while I just sit out there and serve. And we just found ways to get out on the practice court. I think mainly because I think I wanted to so much. So that kind of helped a little bit being real into it. So.
Well, you know, what I found interesting when you and I first started talking about this was it came up because we talked about the importance of kids playing matches and how, you know, training has changed so much. It's all about drill groups and private lessons and less about match play now. And that's when you shared your story of all the people you played against growing up. And I just, you know, I'd love to see our junior development system get back to more of that, where kids are playing against adults and, you know, even against like some of these 65, 75-year-olds who slice and dice and can't move, but they'll beat you with their tricks and, you know, they push you outside your comfort zone. Talk a little bit about the type of opponents you faced growing up and what that did for your development once you got back into, let's say, a USTA tournament where you were facing kids of your own age. What do you feel like you were able to bring to the table as a result of playing against all these different people?
I mean, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, you know, you go to a drill group and you hit with kids that are all the same age as you or right around the same age. They grew up learning the game the same way you did, so you'll hit a similar ball, and it's great. I mean, I'm not taking anything away from that because I would have loved to have had the 10 or 11 guys I had on my college team to practice with every day, because that would have been awesome for my development. But I was playing 45-year-old men and 50-year-old men that would just, you know, find a way just to beat me because they were older and they were a little bit smarter and they could, you know, use the court a little bit more, and they hit shots that, quite frankly, I just never saw very much of. You know, a lot of slicing, a lot of serve and volley, and a lot of, you know, just moonballing, mixing up their game, a lot of variety. And to me, that's probably the best part of my game. You know, my dad told me from an early age, I was that kid that was 11, 12 years old that was coming in on everything, slicing everything, you know, using the whole court, using every kind of shot in the book. And, you know, to me, that's probably the best attribute in my game. I don't have many good attributes anymore, but when I was playing, I think, you know, being able to kind of do everything and knowing how to slice and knowing how to mix up my game and knowing how to, you know, quite frankly, just get creative, because that's what I played against all the time. And I can remember going and playing this one 45-year-old doctor. We probably played once a week for 3 years, and he you know, I've talked to him every now and then now, and at the time I just thought he was just such a jerk. I just hated him so much for some reason, even though I played him once a week. And it wasn't hate that I didn't like him. It was just the way he played was just really frustrating, because I was used to a nice heavy topspin ball bouncing and kicking up, and he was slicing, coming forward, moonballing, angling me off the court. We're playing on clay court. I'm slipping around. I'm sliding. I'm frustrated. But, you know, that's the kind of stuff you don't get in the practice group with people your age that kind of play a similar game. And so for me, that was probably the best thing I could do on a tennis court, was I had about a gazillion different options to go to of how I was going to try and, you know, master this chess game and try and figure this other person out and beat him on the court. So, you know, as much as I hated it at the time, now that I look back on it, I was like, man, that's probably the best thing for me right there. So, these days it's tough to kind of get that mix, especially when you have 20, 30 kids all around your level. It's kind of hard to beat that, but, you know, getting some match play in against different type of players, in my opinion, is invaluable. So, I guess I got lucky.
And you can't teach that. Yeah, you can't.
No,
I mean, you as a coach, you can't teach that. I mean, it's one of those things you have to face. And, you know, I mean, it's frustrating as all get out. Even as an adult, you know, when I play people that play that way, I get so frustrated because that's not how I grew up playing either. So.
Right. No, it is. It's tough. And, you know, I always say this when I'm coaching, and this is, you know, I always watch, but when I'm watching basketball on TV, or I'll be watching LeBron James or someone, and I'll hear the announcer go, God, he's got unbelievable basketball IQ. And for the longest time, I was like, what the heck does that even mean? Then you sit there and watch him play, and he just understands the game, every facet of the game, right? So to me, when I was playing these different type of players, that's kind of how I developed my tennis IQ. You know, learning the angles, learning what affects people, learning what doesn't affect people, learning what can drive someone crazy, the smallest thing. So to me, that's how you develop tennis IQ, is not just hitting heavy forehands and blasting big first serves down the tee. You know, it's figuring out how to beat someone that plays a different game that takes you completely out of your game, and knowing how to do that against almost every kind of player. So I think of tennis IQ. That's the word I think of when I think of how I learned to grow up.
Right. And it's, I mean, obviously it served you well. You did well in the juniors. Where did you wind up ranking wise in the juniors?
You know, I probably hovered in the South anywhere between 10, 5 and 25 at any given point, you know, anywhere in between there. And I would, you know, my highest national ranking probably came when I was 12 or 13 years old. I was team the country, but you know, for me, I played a lot of tournaments because that was, for me, a lot of practice. You know, when I get to go play a tournament, it's like, all right, I got 6 or 7 kids I get to practice with every day, you know. So I played
right.
a lot of tournaments because that's how I got some practice in. But, you know, I hovered in anywhere between 5 and 25 in the South, and, you know, anywhere between 50 and 200 in the nation. So it just depends. It depended on you know, how well I was playing, how engaged I was. And as you probably know, having a son that plays, what mental mindset I was in at the time. So,
yeah.
You know, anywhere in between there. But, you know, you have ups
and
downs.
Did you play a lot of national tournaments?
You know, that's the one thing I talk to my dad about a lot, is I wish I would have played more national tournaments. With that being said, I played every Super National, and I did some National Opens that were all around, all around where I lived. But, you know, this is what I talked to my dad about. I wish we would have jumped into that a little bit sooner and at a higher rate, because just like anything, you know, you have that intimidation factor, and I got really comfortable in the state at first. And for me, Alabama wasn't a tough state to get comfortable in, but then you move on to the South, and you got to get comfortable playing kids from 9 other states, and then you move to the nation, and you're playing kids from all over the country, and there's kind of that intimidation factor. And so for me, that was probably our biggest pitfall, was not playing enough national tournaments early enough to get me comfortable. So, so that's my dad and I always talk about. Now that I'm teaching, he always likes to reminisce on how things went and things we could have done better. And we always like to chit chat about it. So, you know, that's one thing I wish we would have done a little bit of better job of, is just getting accustomed to the national scene a little bit more. So,
why do you think you didn't do that? Was it an expense thing, a time thing, both?
You know, for me, I was fortunate. My dad was totally engaged. He was willing to go through he would have gone anywhere. We'd have gone play it on the equator if we had to, you know. He was willing to pay for it and take me out there and spend time with me and do all that stuff. I just, you know, I think at the time we just didn't know. My dad learned everything about junior tennis on his own. I mean, he went through that USTA website and he would sit down there and he was just, I mean, it was crazy the amount of spreadsheets he'd come up with. I mean, he's a finance guy. So yeah, I think he kind of enjoyed it a little bit, but you know, we learned tennis on the fly. We had no prior background in tennis and we had no one kind of guiding us along the way. You know, I had coaches, but no one really showing him, hey, this is what your tournament schedule should look like. This is how the process works. This is, you know, we just kind of figured it out on our own. He just stuck me in tournaments. I played them, and if I did well, it was fun. If I didn't do so well, it wasn't that fun. And we just kind of learned on the fly. So it was like, play as many Southern tournaments as you can, get your ranking as high so you can get into all these national tournaments. And that's kind of how we did it. But, you know, we just didn't know any better, to be honest. We had no idea what we were doing when we started doing it.
You needed Parenting Aces back then.
Lisa, we needed it more than anything, and I probably needed it more than anyone. My dad probably enjoyed learning all of it, but his learning and some of his failures and some of his success, that was could be a little tough at times. But we definitely needed it because we had no one parenting us.
Right. So you had a pretty successful junior career. I would categorize it that way. I'm sure you would too. And then it came time to make a decision about college. Where did you look, and what did the recruiting process look like for you?
Oh, man, recruiting. So there we go again. You know, we just learned on the fly. We sent out emails to college coaches and just kind of hoped for the best. And I think, honestly, might even started a little late doing it. We just kind of hoped coaches would see me play at tournaments and they'd want me. But you know, as you know, it's not that simple. So we sent some emails out, and honestly, when I was a junior, maybe the start of my senior year or late junior year, I talked to the Colorado coach, and he wanted me to come, and I liked him because he was the first coach that wanted me, and who wouldn't want to move out to Boulder, Colorado to go to school? So I was sold on Boulder, and I was ready to go. But unfortunately, as the tennis community knows, funding sometimes for schools tennis is not the number one priority. So as quickly as I got excited about Colorado, I quickly got unexcited because they ended up having to drop their tennis program. So we kind of started the whole process all over again. And so I went on trips. Man, I went on a trip to LSU, went on a trip to Michigan State. I went on a trip, I went to Michigan State because my mom's side of the family, they're all big Michigan State fans. They live up north in Michigan. So I was like, well, please that side of the family. So I went on a recruiting trip there. I went on a trip to Alabama, which was where my parents went. So I grew up a lifelong Alabama fan, and then went on a trip out west to Santa Clara. And then I went on a trip to East Carolina, which is where my dad's side of the family's from. So I just kind of picked a couple spots, and to be honest with you, I really didn't want to go to Alabama because I wanted to kind of get a little bit further away from home. So I kind of wanted to go to LSU, but LSU didn't quite want me as much as I wanted to go there. So, you know, my dad and I kind of, you know, my dad and I kind of sat down and we talked about it, you know, financially for him and kind of, you know, we talked through some things, and I'm as much as my dad and I fought about tennis and the ups and the downs we had throughout the process, you know, he gave me some great advice. He said, look, you know, you're a big Alabama fan. They got everything you're looking for in a school, which is kind of how you start, right? You say, hey, what do you want? What are you looking for in a school? You know, hey, I want a big football program because I want to be able to go to the game and have fun on Saturdays. I want, you know, this, that, and the other. So that's kind of how we started. We kind of made a list of what I wanted and what I didn't want in the school, and then we kind of narrowed it down. And so he was like, look, I've always got everything you want. I know it's close to home, but I think you're going to like that in the long run. Your mom and I can come watch you play. You know, you got that built-in pride in the school because you grew up an Alabama fan. And when I say I grew up an Alabama fan, I mean, as people from the South know, I mean, it's we're football. So I was into it. I mean, I loved Alabama football. So when I made the decision, I mean, it was pretty easy for me. I mean, we had talked to Billy, the coach. You know, he's at Princeton now, but he had seen me play a couple of times. I'd emailed him, and he was kind of on the fence. And I was like, look, I'm coming. I want to come. You should take me. And so he was like, let's do it. So that's kind of how I got to Alabama. And honestly, I couldn't have picked a better school for me. You know, just having that built-in fandom of the school before you get there, to me, is something you can't match. You know, getting to go play for the school that you grew up kind of idolizing. You know, was I didn't go watch the tennis players at Alabama, but I did go watch football games every other weekend since I was like 12 years old. So of course when I wasn't playing. So yeah, that's kind of how we went. I mean, we just flew by the pants of our seat. I mean, you know, the cuff of our sleeve is, my dad just kind of did everything he could. So it was, we needed some help, that's for sure. But it, you know, luckily for us, it worked out a little bit.
And so once you got to Alabama, did you play right away?
No. Well, you'll laugh, actually. My first college tournament I ever played in, I won it. And I was sitting there, and I was as the assistant coach, and like four or five of us went down to Bollettieri for this tournament. And, you know, at the time, I didn't know anything about college tennis. It was like the first tournament I went to. And so I won the tournament. I was like, oh, yeah, I'm, you know, I'm a big shot here. You know, I was getting a little bit of a big hit, thinking this wasn't going to be so hard. And then, you know, reality hit. And that's when you're in practice every day, getting your tail whipped by guys that are just, you think are way better than you. And then the season rolls around and you're really not playing. And that's kind of tough. But for me, I loved it. Because, you know, I had 11 best friends to practice with every day, and I was just having a blast just being on the team. So that first year, I don't even think I played a dual match, maybe a smaller one against maybe Furman or someone like that. Coach would throw me in the lineup, but, you know, I didn't play it all freshman year. And so that was a little discouraging. It wasn't all roses as I'm making out the sound. I mean, I felt like I could play six, and I wanted to play six, and we were kind of struggling at six that year, but we were a good team. You know, we were a good team, but, and as you know, SEC tennis is tough, but, you know, you sit on the bench and you're watching the sixth guy where you think you could play, and he's losing a little bit, and, you know, naturally you're just going to want to play, right? So, I butted heads a little bit with coach, just saying, hey, give me an opportunity, but, you know, I kind of trusted the system a little bit, and, you know, it worked out. It really did. I sat, and I got to learn, I got to watch, and I'll be honest, I was not prepared to play six that year. So it kind of worked out for both of us because I probably would have gotten in there and gotten a rude wake-up call. So, I was riding the pine. I wasn't even on the travel team that year. I don't think I might have been playing nine that year. So tumultuous
so
road that first
that?
Year. But
talk about that a little bit, because I think it's one of those things that, you know, kids think, you know, the coach has recruited me, they want me on the team, that means I'm going to play. And that's not necessarily the case. And you know, we went through this a little bit during the recruiting process in our house. You know, you have an opportunity to go to a bigger school and be part of the team, but you know you're never going to play. Or you go to a smaller program where you're likely going to be in the lineup right away. And, you know, there's a lot to be said for being able to say, yeah, I'm on the Alabama tennis team and, you know, we're ranked and yada, yada, yada. But if you're not playing, that takes its toll. Because even though you're not in the lineup, that still means you're having to get up early and do the track work, do the court work, do the gym work. I mean,
realistically, you should be doing more, right? You know, so it's a hard place, but for me, honestly, Lisa, I kind of liked it. I'll be honest with you. I liked it because for the first time in my life, I could I was in school, and I wasn't a normal student by any means. I was still going to the workouts, doing the morning workouts, going to practice 2 days, you know, 2 hours, 3 hours a day, and going through the rigors of that. But for me, it was the first time in my life where I was able to spend time with my friends socially. I know that's kind of a weird thing to think about, you know, but that's kind of the hard part about tennis, right, is you're gone all the time. It's not like you're playing high school football and, you know, all your friends are coming out to watch you play on Friday night, and then Saturday you get to hang out with them and all this stuff. It's kind of like you're that kid that's never at school, and you're always on the road, and your teachers hate you, and you're missing every Friday and every Monday of school, and you never get to hang out with your friends. You don't have that social aspect. So for me, honestly, I kind of enjoyed, you know, I enjoyed the practice, and I enjoyed the social aspect of being able to hang out with my friends. I know that sounds weird, and as I say it, it's like, man, that's kind of weird where my mindset was, but I loved it. I loved it.
Not
for that
at
person.
All.
You know, that doesn't mean I didn't want to play. It was just, hey, you know what? I'm practicing. I get all this cool gear. I'm on the team. I'm getting better. I get to watch good tennis, and I get to hang out with my friends. You know, growing up in Alabama, you know, half the school goes to Alabama, half the school goes to Auburn. That's how it works, right? So,
right.
You know, that part of it wasn't so bad. But then, you know, the next year rolls around and you're kind of on the fence still, and then that's where it starts getting tough. You know, you're like, okay, I want to play. I'm putting all this work in, and I want to get on the court, and I want to see what I can do. So, you know, that first year wasn't bad because I was, you know, the fall, you get to play a lot of tournaments in the fall, and we're fortunate that coach would schedule a lot of doubleheaders against some smaller schools, and so I'd get in the lineup and I'd get to play a little bit there, and then, you know, but it kind of gets back to what I grew up playing, and I didn't, you know, I was just having fun practicing with 11 other really good players, you know. It was like, that was kind of like my reward, to be honest, in my head, and then you throw in getting to hang out with my friends from school that I haven't really been able to hang out with for 3 or 4 years. So it wasn't tough on me my freshman year, to be honest. I mean, I butted heads a little bit, obviously, naturally, but, you know, looking back on it, I think about it, I'm like, you know what, was I really in the mindset to want to play anyways? And now that I think about it, probably not. So so it wasn't as tough as maybe some kids take it. Maybe I had a different outlook on it.
So you stuck it out. Sophomore year, you're playing, I suspect, more. And did you have to work your way up the lineup, or how did that go?
So sophomore year rolled around, and we had some good players come in, and we had just a few leave, and it was a rocky road. And honestly, this is sophomore year, I was really close to quitting the team and wanting to do a fraternity with all my buddies, and that was kind of going to my head, but call my dad and just kind of talk through some things. That's the best thing about my dad, is you just sit there and say, you know, like most kids' dads or moms, it's like you just call and bounce ideas off of them. The next thing you know, I'm jacked up, ready to start playing again, you know. So I went through those down times of not wanting to play and wanting to quit and going to do something else. But my dad made me stick it out. And so, yeah, by the end of sophomore year, I was in and out of the lineup. I wasn't playing, you know, I wasn't like a fixture in the lineup by any means. There was a little bit of doubles, matchup, six singles. And, you know, so I was getting a little bit of, you know, you get that taste of playing in the lineup and you win some matches, and maybe you quench the doubles point, or maybe you win a singles match and then the team wins. And that's, to me, that's what's addicting. I mean, I'm addicted to that feeling, you know, of wanting to, you know, wanting to be the last match on, and just that feeling of clinching a match is unlike anything else. So, you know, by sophomore year, I was in and out of the lineup playing a little bit. And then by junior year, that's when things really hit full force. You know, my partner and I doubles had made the finals of regionals. So we were a good doubles team. I think we were like 15 or 16 in the country. And by that point, you know, just like most coaches would imagine, you know, if you got a guy playing, has some experience, you know, it's a little bit easier to throw him in a singles lineup. So, I honestly don't even think, you know, looking back on it, I was like, I don't even think I was worthy of playing singles, but I just had some experience, and coach kind of trusted me, and I was playing doubles at a high level, so he kind of just stuck with me. So that's kind of the story. I mean, my partner and I had a really good run at regionals and beat some really good teams, and that kind of gave me the confidence. Now, you know what, look, this isn't as these boys aren't as good as you think they are, and you can compete, and you should be working harder to get in there and really try and do something. So it was a long road, though. I mean, I wasn't playing a lot, and I was ready to quit, and then, you know, I got in there, and then the rest is history, really. I played, and I loved it, and then that's the best times in the world is in that team bus going to Gainesville, Florida, or driving to Lexington, Kentucky, or coming home from Ole Miss. I mean, those are the times that I miss the most, right? It's not the morning workouts by any means, but it's the bus rides with 12 buddies. And, you know, you and me talked about this. You know, tennis is very foreign, and it's kind of brutal when you're getting recruited. But once you get on the team, you know, having friends from all over the world is something that no other sport can really say, you know, in college. So that's probably my favorite part, was getting to meet, you know, guys from all over the world. You know, we had a guy come in from Estonia, Lisa, and I didn't even know where Estonia was. I didn't even know it was a country. And yeah. I remember picking him up at the airport over Christmas break, because I lived in Birmingham, so I had the responsibility of picking everybody up at the airport and driving them to Tuscaloosa. So I remember picking up at the airport, and as you can imagine, the conversation was not very robust. It was very simple, but you know, it's funny because now him and I are good buddies, and to see what he's doing is unbelievable, and to see where he's come from is unbelievable, and to know, you know, to know you got a buddy from a country that you'd never heard of before he got there is pretty unique. So, it was a blast. College, like everyone said, you know, the glory days.
Do you remember what your dad said to you when you told him you were thinking about quitting that made you change your mind? Or was it just a series of conversations?
I wish I knew. I think the big thing for me was I wanted to do the fraternity so bad because I saw all my buddies and they were doing it, and I thought it was so cool, and, you know, all the sorority girls and this, that, and the other, and that was the piece that I wanted. And I think, you know, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but I think what he says, look, man, he's like, all your buddies in your fraternity, you already do all the stuff they do. You just don't have to do all the lame stuff. You know, you don't have to do all the crazy stuff, and you're not forced to show up on, you know, your fraternity is a tennis team. And when he kind of broke it down to me and said, look, you got a built-in fraternity right here. And not only is it a fraternity, but it's a fraternity of guys that all have a common goal and are working towards something and all work hard and all good influences on you. So, why don't you enjoy what your friends do when you go hang out with them and enjoy your fraternity on the tennis team? So, you know, I think he knew how my mind worked. Obviously, spending hours and hours on end in the car with me after tennis matches and driving home, and, you know, he just knew how to kind of, you know, he knew how to shit, pull my strings and say, you don't want to do that, you know. So,
right.
He, you know, I can't remember exactly what he said, but something along those lines. Hey, you know, you got a built-in fraternity, and look, think about all your buddies, and think about all this hard work you've put in. You know, you don't want to squander all that just because you want to go get a cool football, you know, seat at the football game and wear a suit and wear a Kappa Kappa Gamma Loves the Tide sticker. You know, he just kind of broke it down and made me feel a little dumb for wanting to do it, and that's kind of my dad. You know, I think he's very big into humiliation. So he kind of made me feel dumb for even suggesting the idea. And next thing I knew, it was, you know, I never thought about that again. So,
that's funny.
My dad's an interesting guy. So if you met him, this would make a lot more sense to you.
Yeah. I hope I get a chance to meet him when he comes to visit you. So what did you end up majoring in at Bama?
Yeah, so I double majored. I did finance and economics, and it's not because I'm a genius by any means. I am not the smartest tool in the shed, so not the sharpest tool in the shed. So I started with finance, really because I had no idea what I wanted to do. My dad worked in finance. My grandfather worked in finance. So I was like, you know what? Finance it is. And then as things go on, you know, the ability to double major with economics wasn't as tumultuous as I thought. You know, it was only about 10 or 12 more classes, so I said, you know, why not So yeah, I did finance and economics. I did summer school every summer, and I'll be honest, summer was the best time of the year in T-Town for me. So finance and economics.
And then after you graduate, did you graduate in 4 years?
I did. I graduated in 4 years, and this is where my mom and my dad are so different. When I graduated, I was like, get me out of here. I want to go get a job. I want to be successful. I want to make a lot of money. You know, I want to get into the quote unquote real world and start doing it. And my mom, you know, as much credit as I don't like to give her, she's usually right. And I can remember standing there. I can remember standing at the courts after like playing UAB and Stanford maybe. And I wasn't playing singles, so I was watching singles, and I was just talking to my mom, and she was like, well, what's your plan? You know, what do you want to do? And I was like, I'm ready. I was telling her everything, right? She had a friend there that I can't remember if she worked for the school or something, but she had something to do with grad school at Alabama, and they were like, you should go to grad school. Like, just, you know, giving me that business. And I was like, oh, I'm not doing that, you know, because my sister's like a lifetime student. You know, she did school, mm-hmm. grad school, PhD. She works at the school now. So she's the smart one in the family. And so I was like, I'm not doing that. I'm not going to go to school the rest of my life. So I was like, get me out of here. I don't want to touch a tennis racket again. I'm burned out. So I went to work. So I went to work in Birmingham at a financial firm called Stern Agee & Leach as a financial advisor. And I did that for about a year and a half. I didn't touch a racket. I didn't even know where my rackets were, honestly. I think I gave one tennis lesson to my buddy because he wouldn't stop bugging me about it. And he gave me a free golf lesson in return. So that's the only time I touched the racket the entire time I lived in Birmingham. And then in December of 2013, I think it was, I moved firms to Merrill Lynch and moved to Atlanta, started working at Merrill Lynch in Atlanta. So I did that up until probably two and a half years later, I did that. So that was an experience, to say the least.
That's a big move. I mean, Birmingham's a nice city, but it size-wise and busyness-wise doesn't compare to Atlanta. And so, you know, that is a big move to come from there to here. Now you're teaching tennis full-time. What happened that brought you back to the game?
So, as most probably know, I mean, the financial industry can be interesting. It can be very stressful. It can be fun. It can be rewarding. It can be tough. You know, I honestly treat everything like a tennis match that I do in my life. So when I was working at Merrill or working at Stern Agee, I just treated my task just like I would in a tennis match. You know, I was like, this is my goal. This is what I'm going to have to do to get there. And that's kind of how I did it. But I kept my head down and I was doing a great job at it, but I was working 78 hours a week and I was stressed out and I was living like I was a 45-year-old married man with two kids. And finally I had something go on with a new client of mine, and I really didn't want to. I'd finally gone on a vacation in about a year and a half. My girlfriend and I had gone down to the beach, and we were going to go Thursday through Tuesday. But anyway, I'd just gotten this new client, and believe it or not, some people with a lot of money aren't sometimes the smartest people in the world. So we had some issues there, and I ended up having to cut my vacation short, and it was a long process. And so after I fixed that issue, I kind of just lay in my bed one morning before I was supposed to get up to go to work. And I was just like, I don't want to do this anymore. I was like, I'm done. This is too much for me right now. So of course, just like any problem I have, I call my dad, you know, and he was in Italy at the time. And I hadn't talked to him about it yet. I'd gone in my manager's office and I quit. I said, I can't handle this anymore. I quit. So I'd quit. And then that was when the hard part was to call my dad and tell him, hey, I quit my job. So I called him. He was in Italy. So I called him over his shaky Wi-Fi. And I made it sound a little bit shakier than it really was, you know? And I was like, hey, Dad. I was like, how's Italy? And he's like, oh, it's great. How's everything going over with you? And I was like, oh, I quit my job. I got to go, you know, just real quick. threw that in there, and he's like, what? He's like, wait, what? What'd you do? And he's like, let me call you back when I get better Wi-Fi. So he called me back, and he said, what'd you do? And I was like, I quit. I literally quit my job yesterday. And he goes, best decision you've ever made, and which is
wow.
Something I did not expect. Yeah, I was not expecting that. And so this is the cool thing about my dad. He's pretty serious, and he's into a lot of things, but, you know, he's pretty honest at times. So he was like, best decision you've ever made. He said, well, what are you going to do? And I was like, honestly, I have no clue what I want to do. So after I quit, I took a couple weeks off. I went out to Houston and visited a couple friends there. And then I went out to San Francisco and visited a couple friends out there. And then I came back from San Francisco for my sister's wedding. She got married on Halloween Day. So I came back for that. And then I got back to Atlanta. And as any kid knows, it's ever quit a job or has been fired and is unemployed and all his friends are working, it's not as cool as it sounds, not working. You know, you just get so bored. So I was just kind of sitting around trying to figure out my next move. And so I called up to Chastain, UTA Chastain. I was like, hey, do y'all need any help? You know, I'd love to come out and help with your junior drills and help. So that's kind of how I started. I literally came out there. I was working like 8 to 10 hours a week, maybe, just doing some drills with UTA out there. And next thing I know, I was like, man, this is fun. And then I started looking into it. My dad's like, why don't you just teach full time? And I was like, well, I don't know. I don't know if I want to do that. And so I started teaching a little bit more, and I was just so fun. I mean, it was the most fun thing I've ever done, you know? So I was like, I'm going to keep doing this. So that's kind of how I got into it. At least I really stumbled into it. I started helping, and then it was fun. So I kept doing more. And you know, the cool thing, Lisa, is not many people, and this is what I tell my dad. I said, you know, at the very least, playing tennis growing up, you've set me up with at least a very good backup plan for anything I ever want to do, because not many people have the option to quit their current job and go into a field that they have 100% expertise in. You know what I mean? It's like, you usually don't quit a job and go to a new job and have more experience in that job than your previous job. You know what I mean? It's not, that's usually not the case. So, you know, I tell a lot of our kids, like, at the very least, you need to stick with it, because one day you might need to teach tennis. You know, just quite frankly, you might not have another option and you might need to do it. And so for me, that's kind of how I got into it. I just kind of stumbled into it and really enjoyed getting back on the court and working with kids and working with adults and seeing improvements in games and having that confidence level in my ability. You know, I was successful at Merrill, but, you know, everything I did there I learned on my own, and it was over a span of 3 or 4 years. So I still didn't feel like I had, you know, that full grasp on what I was doing. You know, I was doing a good job. I just didn't feel like I had that full grasp like I do on tennis. And I walked on a tennis court, and I was like, man, this is easy. You know, I was like, I've been training for this my whole life, right? So
right.
So that's how I got
true.
Into it.
So the listeners understand, UTA is an academy here in Atlanta. They have several locations that they run out of, and Chastain is a park here, and Trey coaches out of that location, and that's the team I'm on, and that's how I met him. But so becoming a full-fledged, full-time tennis coach, I mean, yes, you can just kind of say from one day to the next, oh, I think I'm going to be a tennis coach now. And, you know, you can buy a bucket of balls and set up shop at the local courts and, you know, hopefully find some people to teach. But there's more to it than that, right? I mean, there's education that you need to go through. And so talk a little bit about that, because I think it's important for people to understand that, you know, and I have touched on this many, many times on this show, that there's a difference between a tennis teacher and a teaching professional, right?
Absolutely. So that's a great point. I mean, it's not as easy as just rolling over one day and getting out on a tennis court, right? I mean, there's things that have to go on. And you know, this kind of gets back to that tennis IQ I was talking about. You know, when I was growing up playing people of all different ages and skill levels and game types, I mean, that to me is part of how I coach. You know, I just know every game style. I know how to how to beat it. I know how it beats other people. I know so much about the game just through growing up and playing and having to play different people. You know how we talked about that. I mean, I think that's probably my best skill as a coach is just knowing the game through and through. But, you know, other than kind of getting lucky with that, you know, our college coach was wise, even though sometimes I didn't think he was. He one weekend he brought a USPTR guy in and he got us all certified through the USPTR, you know, which is one of the two biggest, you know, certification titles in tennis. So, you know, I got lucky with that because I already had my licenses there. So, you know, it's between that and the tennis IQ, coaching tennis was an easy move for me. But you know what? What I didn't realize that I did have was that, you know, just like any probably competitive tennis player, I mean, you just have that competitiveness. So I just loved seeing improvements in my lessons games. I mean, whether it was a C-level player moving to Bs or whether it was a beginner learning how to hit a topspin forehand, whether it was, you know, what I really, really enjoy is working with some high-level kids that were kind of where I was when I was a junior and didn't have that kind of mentorship or someone to kind of show them the ropes. So, I mean, coaching's tough though. It's not all fun and games sometimes, you know, it's that part I'm still learning, you know, learning how to be a good mentor, learning how to really get people motivated because not everyone's motivated the same way. So, you know, that's a piece I'm still learning, but you know, I got fortunate with coach getting us certified and learning different games. So yeah, I mean, that's, coaching to me is easy because I love tennis. You know, I didn't realize how much I loved tennis until I got out of tennis and then got back into it. You know, it wasn't the getting out of tennis that made me realize how much I liked it. It was coming back to tennis that made me realize how much I loved being on the court. And just that confidence side out there, you know, knowing that you know what you're talking about, you know you can make a difference. And that part is good, having that self-confidence and knowing that you – know all this stuff and that you're leading people in the right direction. So you know, that's coaching to me. And I'm still learning. Like I said, I'm new to coaching. I mean, I never had a coaching job until I started working at, started doing this gig. So I'm evolving as a coach.
So long-term, what do you see yourself doing? Do you see yourself continuing as a coach? You know, let's look 5 years down the line, 10 years down the line, 20 years down the line. You know, right now you're a single guy and, you know, your responsibilities off the court are relatively minimal compared to, you know, somebody my age. And
absolutely.
So,
and Lisa, that's a good point you make, because when I quit my job, and my dad said, hey, best decision you ever made. He said, look, he's like, if you're going to make a choice like this, you need to do it now. Because when you're married and you have kids and you want to quit your job and do something else, well, unfortunately, you're not going to have that liberty. So, you know, he made that clear to me early that's the move. And so, Lisa, honestly, I get this question a lot, right? I teach a lot of people that I used to work, kids that I used to work with at Merrill, and they're always asking me when I'm going to come back. And, you know, some of my lessons are like, so what's your game plan with coaching? And, you know, right now I don't have a 5, 10, 15 year, 20 year plan right now. Cause I'm just kind of enjoying the journey right now, but I don't foresee coaching. I don't foresee coaching being something that I'm going to stop wanting to do. I mean, it's fun and it's something that I have such a good time doing. Now, of course, it's like any job, and you know, some mornings you don't want to get out of bed, but you know, when I get out of bed and I get to walk out on a tennis court and I get this nice summer tan when it's just now April and I get to work outside and I get to meet new people. I mean, to me, coaching looks like the long-term choice for me, but you know, I have no idea where I'm going to go with this. You know, I don't know how long I'm going to do it. I just know that I'm having a really fun time doing it, and I'm meeting a lot of awesome people, and I get to feel that those competitive juices through my kids that play. And it's funny, I didn't realize how stressful being a parent was until I started coaching kids and going to tournaments. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is what I put my parents through for 8 years. I'm like, this is so stressful. It's so much harder watching. I mean, it is so much harder watching. So, yeah, Lisa, I wish I get this question a lot. And actually my girlfriend was asking me this the other day. And I was like, yeah, I don't have an answer to that right now. I just know that I'm having a lot of fun doing what I'm doing. Able to support myself in a manner that I'm happy with. And, you know, I'm not making near as much money as I was when I was working at Merrill Lynch, but I'm in such a better state of mind, and I'm not stressed out. I'm enjoying what I'm doing. Getting out of bed's easy. You know, so I think the benefits of, you know, I was never a big believer in this, you know, the mental health benefits and all that stuff. I've never been that kind of guy, but I'm totally on board now, because my mental health, my physical health, everything, it makes a difference. And I'm noticing that. So, you know, whether I stick with coaching for 40 years or whether I somehow wake up one day and want to do something else, you know, I don't know, but right now I know it's what I want to do, and I'm going to keep doing it until either someone tells me to stop or I have some kind of change of heart. So,
right. Do you see college coaching in your future?
You know, I've thought about it. I've thought about doing that. And then that to me sounds like an unbelievable time. You know, it's kind of a harder road getting into that. You know, you got to start at a small school and be an assistant, but you know, my dad and I talked about that probably a month ago, and, you know, I think eventually maybe I will, but maybe I stick with coaching juniors and get them to college. You know, maybe that's, you know, so I don't know. I really haven't made a decision on that. And it's one of those things that if I get a good opportunity, you know, old coach calls me or old teammate that's coaching calls and says, hey, we're looking for an assistant coach, and do you want to come help? And, you know, just like the last couple, you know, last year and a half, I might say, yeah, you know, just depends. I'm trying to be a little bit less calculated. I've always been a very calculated person. So kind of one of my goals with quitting my job and starting to teach tennis was to be a little bit less calculated with what I'm doing. So that doesn't mean I'm going crazy out here, but I'm trying to be a little bit less calculated. I've always been very, very regimented, very by the book. And so I'm kind of trying to be a little bit more not carefree, but a little bit more stress-free. How about that?
That sounds good. So do you miss competing yourself, or are you still playing tournaments? I mean, there are tons of opportunities here.
You know, here's the funny story is when I was working at Merrill, I was seeing a little bit of a change in my body, if you will. you know, I was sitting behind a desk all day, every day. And I was, you know, going to dinners with clients and eating like a king, and I wasn't working out and I wasn't playing because really I didn't have time. And so I was seeing a little bit of a transformation with my body. You know, I've always been that super slender guy that ran around and played three matches in sweltering heat in the middle of the summer and didn't have to worry about putting on a little bit of weight, but I started doing that. And so that, honestly, one night I was out with some friends, and I ran into two guys that I grew up playing junior tennis with, and they said, hey, why don't you join our Alpha team? So I was like, you know what? I need to do this. I was like, I need to join Alpha. So that's how I started hitting again. I joined an Alpha team with two guys that I probably haven't seen since we were 16 or 17 years old. Like, it was one of those situations, you know, those guys you've seen since you were 12 years old playing juniors against, they were from Atlanta, and I probably played these two guys 20 times combined, right? You know, so
right.
I just saw them out, and they were like, join our other team. So I was like, all right, let's do it. So I started practicing one night a week on Thursday nights, and it was the best hour and a half of my life for the time being. And then we play Saturday morning. So I started doing that, and then when I started coaching, I was like, man, I don't know if I'm going to really want to, you know, my one morning off, am I really going to want to get up and go play? And the answer to that question is absolutely. Like, I have my next Alpha match Saturday morning, and I am so excited because the level is really good. I get a good workout in. And it's fun. I mean, it's just that, you know, if you're a high-level athlete and you play college tennis or you play high-level junior tennis, you know, you have that competitive itch that you need to scratch every now and then. So I love it. I mean, I'm actually right after this call, I'm about to go practice with the Emory men's team so I can get a little bit of hitting in. And then I got my match Saturday that I'm pretty excited about. We're playing the number one team in our division on Saturday. So I got to be ready to go.
Absolutely. That's awesome. I think it's very cool being here in Atlanta. League tennis is obviously, it's everywhere here. And Alta just does an amazing job at keeping former high-level players engaged in the sport. I think it's really cool that we have that here. And even those of us that weren't that high level as juniors, it's gotten me back into the sport as well.
It's awesome. I mean, Alta is amazing. I mean, from, you know, the level is great. I mean, I remember like my third match, I walked down the court and I'm playing two guys that played at Auburn. And one was they were an All-American doubles team at Auburn, and played one singles at Auburn. I was like, holy cow, like, this is harder than college. So I was like, what is going on out here? So the level is amazing. But, you know, even at all levels, you know, I love coming out and watching my ladies play on Thursday mornings, and it doesn't matter what level. I mean, it's fun. It's just fun. Being competitive, being on it, it's that team environment, and that's what tennis players don't get. You know what I mean? You don't get, as a junior tennis player, it's just you. You don't have team, you don't have coach there. It's just, for me, it was just me and my dad or me and my mom at a tournament. It was like, you go play your match, you know, you have your handful of 5, 6, 7, 8 good buddies, and y'all goof around for 20 minutes before you're like, okay, well, I got to go chug a bunch of Pedialyte and eat a banana and get ready for my next match. So, you know, you don't get that team environment in junior tennis, you know, other than zonals. You know, you get zonals and Davis Cup, and that's it. So, like, you know, the team aspect of tennis is fun. You know, everyone wants to be on a team. You know, whether you say it or not, everyone wants to be on a team. So, you know, that's what's so fun about Alta, I think, is that it's a team environment. You know, you got 12 to 20 ladies that are all working towards a common goal, whether that be, you know, putting the best food spread out on the table or whether that's winning city finals, right? But you still have that team environment. I think that, to me, is that's what I enjoy the most. I mean, the team aspect, you know. So that's always been my thing, the team.
Oh,
like, I
love
zonals because I had teams, you know, I had members. Right. And I always played better that way, you know. You play better when you got other people counting on you. So,
sure. Well,
yeah,
I love your story.
Go ahead.
I love your story, Trey. I think it's such a cool one because it's, I think, more typical than we know. And, you know, growing up in an environment where you didn't have a ton of people your age to play against, so you had to get creative, your parents had to get creative. You wind up at this huge tennis program in college where, you know, you're practicing with these amazing players, but, you know, not getting the opportunity to compete yourself until you proved yourself to the coach and you earned your way into the lineup and ended up having a great experience. And then you were done and moved into the world of finance and realized pretty quickly that the tennis needed to continue to play a role in your life and found your way back to it. And I can say, as one of the women that you coach, you do a great job. You're, you know, really positive and encouraging on the court and make our lessons fun. And I feel like I'm getting better each time I come to a lesson. So that's a good thing. And, you know, we're lucky to have you out there. So I'm glad you made your way back to the game.
Well, I appreciate that. That's the biggest compliment you can give me is that you feel like you're getting better and that you're having fun out there, because there needs to be that balance. You know, even with junior tennis, you know, you need to have that fun every now and then on the court, because if you treat it like a job, it's going to wear you down. You know, tennis is a hard sport to play. I mean, it's like, to me, it's the hardest sport in the world. You know, you're trapped into a cage by yourself with your own thoughts, and that's why the joke is that most tennis players are psychotic, because You're trapped in there. You're talking to yourself. You're sitting there talking to yourself for 2 hours, 3 hours at a time. So I appreciate that. That's the highest compliment you can give me right there.
Well, good. Well, thanks so much for doing the show. I know it's your morning off. I appreciate you getting out of bed and getting online with me and sharing your story with us. And, you know, hopefully my listeners have heard a new perspective and will help them in their journey with their kids through this whole junior tennis craziness